of us are inspired. Whether it's a beautiful sunset, a beautiful piece of music, a wonderful she'er, an idea that we've heard, we all throughout our lives have these moments of inspiration where we feel something so deeply, we're touched so deeply by something, and we feel connected. We feel connected with a much deeper part of self, a godly part of self. However, the problem that we all confront is how do we take this beautiful feeling, this powerful feeling, and allow it to make an everlasting impression on our lives. An inspiration can almost be compared to bubbles that little children play with, that you blow into the bubble and it creates a beautiful, beautiful bubble. But what happens? It dissipates within seconds. Likewise, the inspirations that we feel, although they are very intense and very wonderful, within moments they disappear as if they never were. In Rabbi Tatzin, Living Inspired, notes this in source number 1, where he states that the natural pathway of all life experiences begins with inspiration and soon fades to disappointment. And he explains that human consciousness and human senses are tuned to an initial burst of sensitivity and then rapidly decay into dullness. The question that we need to deal with today is how do we take that rapid decay into dullness and not allow it to happen? How do we maintain the spiritual spark, maintain the freshness of that experience? The second question I'd like to deal with today is why indeed are we inspired at all? Why does God create within the structure of the universe and the way mankind functions within this universe? Why do we have, in fact, at all this concept of inspiration, that we have these moments in our lives that we're very much inspired? What is the purpose, what is the point for these moments of inspiration to be given to mankind? What is the blessing that is found inherent in these levels of inspiration? To answer our first question of how do we maintain the spiritual spark, I'd like to suggest that we need to understand 2 prerequisites that are crucial before we can even begin to understand what to do once we're inspired. There are 2 steps that have to be examined even before the moment of inspiration even enters the scene. The first is found based on a very famous story in the book of Melachim Aleph, Kings 1, the 18th and 19th chapter. We have, at the time of Elijah the prophet, challenged where the Jewish people were being very much swayed by the worship of the Baal, of the sun god. And Eliyahu HaNavi performs a major miracle on Mount Carmel where he proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that God is indeed God, where fire came down from heaven and consumed the sacrifice, the altar, the dust, the water, consumed everything. While the opponent, the Nevi'ei HaBaal, the prophets of the Baal, their sacrifice was not touched, their God was unable to bring down the fire. When the people saw for sure that God was a Din God, the prophets of the Baal had no power, their God could not consume their sacrifice, but God came down and consumed Eliyahu's, Elijah's, the people saw this, they prostrated themselves and said, Hashem Elohim, God is the Lord, God is the Lord. They believed. What happened? The next day, the Queen Izebel, who was not at all pleased with this whole scenario going on, she was a proponent of the prophets of the Baal, so she sent a messenger to Elijah saying, Ka'et machar, at this time tomorrow, asim et nafshecha k'nefesh echad mehem, I will make your soul, Eliyahu, like the souls of the prophets of the Baal, whom you killed yesterday. Basically, Izebel is saying, Eliyahu, I'm very displeased with this that you have accomplished yesterday, and how you killed all the prophets of the Baal, and I am going to basically kill you. So the obvious question that is asked by the commentators is if Izebel was so disturbed by what Eliyahu HaNavi did, so then send a messenger to kill him. Why are you sending a messenger to say tomorrow at this time, I'm going to kill you. If you want him dead, so kill him. So here, it's a very beautiful response. And that is, that had Jezebel killed Eliyahu at that moment, had she sent a messenger to kill him, she would have had a tremendous coup on her hands. The entire people who were so inspired by what Eliyahu did wouldn't have stood for it. How dare you, the kingdom, kill Eliyahu? He's our hero. We believe in God. How could you do such a thing? And the whole kingdom would have been overturned. Ah, but by tomorrow, by the next day, people already forget. People go back into their normal lives, routines. By the next day, if he would kill Eliyahu, people wouldn't say boo. It wouldn't have disturbed them in the least. That's why Jezebel waits one more day. She says, I know inspiration doesn't last. The problem that we're dealing with. Today we're inspired. Today Hashem Elohim, God is the Lord. Tomorrow's another day already. So what is it that we need to do in order to deal with this problem? So in the next story, when Elijah runs away for his life, we find prerequisite number one. Elijah runs to Mount Sinai and he turns to God and he says, God, they're trying to kill me. I'm doing everything possible for your glory, for your name. Kano kineti, I've been zealous for you. What do you want from me, God? I can't handle this anymore. At which God says to him, you know what, Eliyahu? I would like you to go to a certain city and appoint an individual whose name is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, as the next prophet in your place. Elijah does as he's told. He finds this individual, Elisha ben Shaphat. And when he finds him, the Navi describes an exact situation that Eliyahu found him. Verse 4, chapter 19 of Kings, continuing the story, Elijah left and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, plowing with 12 teams ahead of him. Elisha was driving the 12. Elijah came over to him and threw his mantle to him. Elisha left the cattle, ran after Elijah, and he said, let me kiss my father and mother goodbye, and I will follow you. So as we know, no details in the Navi and the Torah are extraneous. Each and every detail teaches us a lesson. So the obvious question we need to ask is, why do we need to know that Elisha was plowing at the time that Elijah came to put the mantle on him, the mantle of leadership, the mantle of prophecy? So the Musar Nevi'im, which is a contemporary understanding of the Navi, gives us a fascinating insight into why Elisha was chosen as represented by the incident of the plowing. Explain to Musar Nevi'im that the most lofty ideas will not be understood by people, will not be inculcated within people, if they are not prepared to receive these ideas beforehand. Rather, middle of source five, ki im bahakshrat rucham, if you prepare their spirit, shiyu yacholim lekabel dvarim musarim vohim, that they can be able to accept these high, lofty ideals and teachings of ethical behavior. Ukishiyu musarim leka, when they're prepared properly. As Bikal Yilaktu et Hazera Hatov Shizra'u al Tamei Levavam, then with ease they'll be able to accept that which you are coming to teach them. Elisha, by being a farmer, is teaching us something very deep. Elisha was chosen because he knew the lesson of farming. The lesson of farming is you need to prepare the field, clear the stone, make the field ready in order for the seeds to be planted. One who just teaches the people without preparing them beforehand is like planting on stones. It will have no effect whatsoever. You need to first clear the field, and once the field is clear, then with ease you'll be able to plant and produce a rich harvest. Prerequisite number one for inspiration to work that we learn from this story is that before you can be inspired, you need to be open to inspirational experiences. You need to open one's heart to be ready to see these inspiring moments in life. The ground has to be prepared. And this idea is really developed in a beautiful Maldim. And a verse in the fifth 65th chapter of Yeshaya, where the verse says, this is Thor 6, verse 10, "For as the rain once fallen from the sky never returns there, rather it shall water the earth, making it blossom and fruitful, giving seed to the sower and bread to the eater," that the power of rain is in order to allow produce to grow. On this, the Malbim explains the following. He says in Sur 7, "Hashefa ha'loki, the divine goodness, yorei tamid, constantly falls on people. Beli hafseik, without stop. Hakel yitain achtov v'chesed, God is constantly bestowing goodness on us." And here's the key. "V'hakol talui b'chanat ha'mikabel." But it all depends on, are we open to receiving? "Shemi shelo hechin et atzmo l'kabel hatova." One who is not open to receive this goodness, "dome" is likened, "kemi shelo zara sadehu shelo yo'il lo hamatar." It's like one who has not planted his field, so that when the rain comes, there'll be nothing for the rain to act on, and no food will grow. It's like rain falling on cement. If you want rain to be effective in your field, so you need to prepare the field and plant the seed. If you want us to really gain benefit from divine goodness and from the inspirational moments in life, so we need to plant the field, we need to prepare the ground, we need to be open to these inspirational experiences. This explains a very powerful idea that's found in Parshas Bishalach. We're standing at the Red Sea. The Jewish people are bound to cross as the sea splits. And the verse tells us the following. The verse says, Moshe Rabbeinu, right before the people cross over, this is source 8, he says to them, "Hisyatzvu ureu et Yeshua Hashem." Stand a moment and reflect on the salvation the Almighty is going to bring about through the splitting of the Red Sea. So before the sea splits, he says, look carefully and you'll see this great miracle. So the obvious question is, if they're standing right there, how could they miss the sea splitting? He's yes for who, stand and see. Are they blind? Of course they're going to see. But this is what it means on a much deeper level. Rav Chaim Mordechai Kant, source 8, notes, without stopping a moment to reflect, one can miss the hand of the Almighty in the most miraculous of occurrences. You might be standing in front of a sea that's splitting, but unless you're open to this, even such an experience, you can miss out on. This is life. Many things happen to us. If we're open and ready for these experiences, we'll be able to see them and use them. If not, they'll pass us by. Perhaps to give a contemporary example of this phenomenon, it's something I think we've all experienced. But let's imagine that we're driving in a car with a friend. We're driving on the freeway, and suddenly from the far left lane, you notice that the car suddenly realizes that it needs to exit, but immediately. So what it does is it moves through three lanes in like split second speed and exits. And you're like holding onto your wheel with dear life saying, "Shoo! Wow, I can't believe what he's done." And you turn to your friend who's sitting by you in the car and says, "Can you imagine what that man did?" And your friend turns to you and says, "What are you talking about? See what? I didn't see anything." Both of you were sitting in the car. The only difference is one of you was in the driver's seat and one in the passenger seat. When you're in the driver's seat, you're alert and ready and you see all that's around you. When you're in the passenger seat, so much passes by in life that you neglect to see. Level number one is to be open to seeing. On a more mystical level, Rav Dessler Miftam Eliyahu develops this idea in Source 9 when he speaks about the creation of the world. We normally understand that the world is created, we use this concept of yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. There was nothing in the world, and then something was created. However, says Rav Dessler, to be really precise, that's not true. Because what was around before the world was created was Hiskalus Hashem, was the revelation of godliness, the desire of God to create the world. So the world was really created from God's desire to create the world. So the world is really a yesh miyesh, a something from something. The something is the world created from the something, which is the desire of God being manifested now in this physical world. So what does the concept of yesh ma'ayin mean? Something from nothing. So explains Rav Dessler that there was one thing which was new in the creation that did not exist in God's mind before the creation was created. And that is the concept of a mekabel, a receiver. Because to receive means by nature that you're lacking something. God, who we know is complete, lacks nothing. So this concept of mekabel, of lacking, of needing to fill a vacuum, could not have existed by God. And therefore, the yesh, the something that was created, me'ayin, thing is this aspect that did not exist before the creation, this concept of receiving. And the yesh, the something, is us, is the concept to receive. And explains Rav Dessler that the Kadosh Baruch Hu created us with this lack, with this missing something, that we need to be a mikaba, we need to receive, because God wanted to give us goodness. And the only way to make goodness appear in this world and for us to appreciate goodness is to realize that we're missing something. This is indeed what life is all about. Life is about understanding that we have a lack, understanding that the world was created, that we are a mekabel, we need to receive, we need to be open to receive, and by being open to receive, we are open for the blessings of God. Rabbi Katz, Living Inspired, in Source 10, notes that for the divine flow of energy to fill our soul, we must become a vessel for it. The flow is there, as we saw in the Malbim earlier. The only question is, where are the vessels? Hashem's desire to give is maximal and permanent, but where are we? And explains Rabbi Tatz, very fascinating, is the reason why it's so difficult to become this kli hamekabel, this vessel, this receptacle to receive, is because our ego stands in the way. He continues in Source 10, what does it mean to become a vessel? How exactly is this done? So he says there's a mystical idea that the highest level of the personality is crystal clear and transparent. But the lower self, the ego, clouds it. The stronger the lower side of the personality, the vested interest, the selfish, the more clouded the Ratzon dimension becomes. When the self is empty, so then God can fill it. Our work is not to cause the light to shine, only to stop obstructing it. To paraphrase the comment of a sage, the world is full of light and we cast the shadows. Brings to mind the story of a young man who used to eat by us on Shabbos very often, a little bit of an eccentric type of fellow. And one Friday night he told us very proudly how he was able to drive from Los Angeles to Las Vegas in 3.5 hours, which is basically half of the normal time. And he was very proud of it. And he was explaining to us how he was going breakneck speed all the way down. But he also told us that while he was driving, he noticed that the sun was rising. And he said it was the most amazing sunrise he's ever seen, that he pulled the car off the road and stopped for a half hour just to watch the sun rise. This is what we're talking about in life. We might be so caught up with self that we have this breakneck speed that we have to get to a certain destination. And we're always so busy in life and we're always so involved with self. You need to be able to stop and pull off the road for a half hour and appreciate a sunrise. If you're so involved in self, and all one sees is self, self, self the entire day, then there's no room for God to fill it with blessing, with an understanding of what life is all about. This is prerequisite number one, to be able to be a vessel for godliness, to open ourselves up for spiritual experiences. Prerequisite number two, which we'll mention just briefly, is found in a fascinating understanding of a Maimar Chazal, a statement of our stages, also in relationship to the splitting of the sea. The sages proclaim, this is brought in source number 12, that the verse says that the Jewish people sung Zekelivan Vehu, this is my God, and I shall beautify him, that they were able to point with a finger and say, this is God, Zekelivan, understanding of Zeh is to point at something. To which our sages note, Ra'ata shifcha al hayam, mashalo ra'a yechezkel ben buzi. Even a maidservant was able at the splitting of the Red Sea to perceive of the divine what Yechezkel ben Buzi was unable to grasp. So the obvious question that Rav Chaim Shmuel Aviv Tzatzal Sichot Musar asks is, why is the Medrash referring to this woman as a maidservant? It should say, maidservant who's now turned into a prophetess saw what Yechezkel didn't see. If she was able to perceive visions that were more lofty than Yechezkel, the great prophet who had that vision of Masa Merkava, of the divine chariot, so why are we calling her a maidservant? To which he notes, a person may experience a lofty awareness, a lucid perception of the divine, yet remain the same person. His knowledge and awareness will not necessarily affect any change in his personality whatsoever. The maidservant, after experience at the sea, retained the same humble stature that she possessed before the event. Prerequisite number 2, once we are inspired, what are we then to do with that inspiration? It's very nice to see God, Zekelivan Vehu. Now what? Now, how are you going to be able to take that experience and actually utilize it and put it into practice and change as a person? And this is the second prerequisite. Prerequisite number 1 is to be open to these experiences. Stop off the road to see the sunset. Be attuned to the inspiring moments that life presents. The smile of a child, the roar of the ocean, the beautiful picture, the beautiful words of Torah, the beautiful music. Be open to these experiences, and then prerequisite number 2, be open to change, be open to act, be open to be a different person because of this experience. Now we can begin to answer our original question. Understanding these two prerequisites, now at the moment of inspiration, I'm open, I've seen this inspiring event, I'm open to it, and I'm open to change, but what should we do practically to affect this change? I think that there are really two approaches to answer this question. And that depends on the type of inspiration that's touching us. And I think we can divide inspiration into two categories. There are the small, inspiring moments that happen every day, every week of our lives. The small things that happen where we feel very special, we feel very good. That moment that really touches us. That fleeting moment. And then there are major points of inspiration in our lives, points that really change the course and direction of our lives. And I think for that, we need a separate understanding of how to respond. Let's work with the first level of inspiration first. The inspiration that we have on a daily, on a weekly basis. So here is a beautiful idea brought down in the name of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev in the Kedushas Levi. And it brings it down based on the Ramban and Nachmanides in a verse from Song of Songs, Shira Shirim. And he notes in source 14 the following. Kishimagia l'adam eze hitarut shel yir'ah v'ahava l'abarei baruchu. When a person has an awakening of awe or of love of God, azan then tekef umiyad immediately, Yira'el la'sot la'kli, one should immediately make a vessel for it. Hainu, which means, she aset tekef eze mitzvah, you should immediately do a mitzvah. Dehainu, which means, she attains taka, you should give charity, or yeshev tekef lomo, or learn Torah v'kadomet, or things of this nature. Ki yadua, it is known, shahit orurut haba'al adam, that this awakening that comes suddenly upon a person, bepeta pit'om, U'or ha'nishpa alav milamala is a light that is being shown on the person from above. V'nikra b'sinat nishama, and it can be referred to as if a soul, the spark, has come down. Azayin sarich ha'adam l'albisha baguf, but a spark needs a body. The flame needs a candle. B'chdein shiyeh l'chizuk u'basis shelo yeh motachas v'shalom, so it does not disappear and fade away. Approach number one for the inspirations that happen on a constant level in our lives is to act upon this inspiration immediately. Do a mitzvah, do a good deed, do something immediately that one can concretize that feeling into reality. I know a friend who had heard this shiur related to me an incident that happened in her life. She was at a birthday party for a grandparent. And she related to me how it was a very special event where the whole family was together. And she said that when she left the party and she went into her car, she felt great. She felt a real sense of family unity and happiness, and a real inner peace pervaded her. And she said when she got into the car, what she wanted to do was immediately to put on some music and to sing along with it. She was really happy. And she said to herself, you know, I feel right now this special moment, this special closeness with self, with godliness. Let me utilize this moment and immediately do a mitzvah so I can concretize this moment in an eternal type of way. So she related to me that she took out a Torah tape that she had in the car and she listened to it on the way home, and how good she felt that she was able to take that feeling and to put it into a dvar mitzvah, into a positive force and positive commandment. This is what we're speaking about here. The moments of inspiration, as we've described, like this bubble, disappear almost immediately. By putting this moment, by taking that emotional energy and placing it into a mitzvah, we've then taken a moment that's very fleeting and placed it into eternity. We placed it into something that will last forever. Rav Chaim Friedlander notes on the verse that we had just mentioned that this idea can be found in the verse of Zekeli Vanvehu, this is my God and I will glorify him. Notes the Sifte Chaim that when we have this concept of Zekeli, this is my God, and we're able to point to him, we must then have the next step of Vanvehu, I will glorify him through doing mitzvot. The spiritual experience of Zekeli is not enough. As he notes in 17, Sarich miyad lomod lekach, we immediately have to learn something. Ulasik et hamaskanot lemaaseh, and to move it into the practical world. Litbonein, to see, ma ani yachol lomod v'lakshimizeh, what can I learn and what can I apply from this experience? And he continues at the end of 17 and he says, im lo yotziena me'akoach ala poa v'maaseh, if you're not going to actualize this into action, so what's going to happen is the rak aidei hamasim titpaseis bo hasaga v'tielo l'kinyan, you will lose this experience from being part of you. If you want to make it a kinyan, that this experience should really affect you and touch you, it has to be va'anvehu, it has to be l'maisa, it has to be practical. How am I now going to act differently because of this experience? To take the inspiration and to move it into the practical. It's interesting to note that the Gra notes that every time a person does the mitzvah, God, so to speak, opens up heavens and allows the person energy to perform another mitzvah, and then yet another mitzvah. So as soon as we are inspired and we do a mitzvah, so not only are we now taking that fleeting moment and concretizing it into eternity, and the mitzvah lasts forever, we've created a kinyan, we've created an acquisition, we've done something lemaisa, we've done something practical, but it goes beyond that. Because once we've done that one good deed, So then it's as if the Shemayim, the heavens, open up and allow us to do another good deed. And that will then bring another good deed. So from the one positive action that one does, there's a ripple effect of many, many positive actions. That one moment of inspiration can allow a person to create a whole slew of eternity, a whole slew of mitzvot. Standing at the seashore, and you see a beautiful sunset, you're standing with a spouse, you're standing with a close friend. So often we experience these moments in silence, almost awestruck by the beauty of these moments. Not just be focused in on self and self-absorbed into this wonderful experience. Turn to the person, share a beautiful word, share a beautiful comment. Allow this experience to be one that can mature into wonderful, fruitful results. These are the minor inspirations within our lives. Let's now take a look at the major inspirations that inspires a person in life. Things that change a person's directions, people whom we meet, major life events, marriage, birth of a child, major inspirational events that change the course or touch the course of a person. Here Rav Chaim Shulevitz and Sichot Musar note a wonderful paradigm that gives us a direction of what to do with these wonderful experiences of our lives. He notes that at the end of the story of the flood, God makes a promise that he will no longer bring the flood to the world. And as a sign of this promise, he places a keshet, a rainbow, in heaven, and he states, this is in Source 20, V'nirata ha-keshet ba'anan, when this rainbow is seen in the heavens, in the clouds, V'zacharti b'riti asher b'niyu b'neichem, I'll recall this covenant between me and between you. Says the Baal Sichos Musar, this is teaching us, the Torah is teaching us their cheretz on how we need to act. When we have these major inspirations in life, we need to put a rainbow. We need to put a symbol within our lives that things have to be different, things have to change. Why does God put a rainbow in heaven? Does God need a physical reminder? Clearly not. But it's to teach us a lesson that when you have a decision, when you've been inspired by something, concretize it into something physical. The rainbow is a symbol to concretize the moment and to allow it to constantly stand before a person as a reminder of this change of direction, this change of inspiration. The model that Rabbi Rav Chaim Shmulevitz gives is the example of Palti ben Laish, who was given the daughter of Shaul, Michal, as a wife. And Michal was already married to David HaMelech. She was an Eshet Ish, she was a married woman. So as soon as Palti was given Michal as a wife, and that circumstances are found in the book of Shmuel, Palti knew he could not even get near this woman because she was a married woman. So what Palti did was, at that moment that he realized that here he was given this woman and he was not allowed really to be with her, he stuck a sword between them, is the expression of the rabbis, and says that whoever moves this sword will be killed by this sword. The sword was a symbol for him of separation, that he was not allowed to get near her. Had he just had this thought in his head and didn't concretize it by a sword, over time you say, well, David hasn't come back, well, Michal is here, and you begin to create all of these rationalizations in life. You're inspired, put a sword down. Do something that's going to change you. And clearly, a very appropriate example of this, as the Sichos Musar gives is in Source 23, is the difference between Yitro and all the other nations. Pasuk tells us, Vayishma Yitro, and Yitro heard, and he came, and he converted, and he joined up with the Jewish people. The Medrash asks, Vayishma Yitro, what did Yitro hear? The Medrash says he heard Kriyas Yamsof about the splitting of the Red Sea. In the Shira Sayam, in the splitting of the sea, the song at the splitting of the sea, the song describes, as we know, Avniv Halu Alufei Edom, the princes of Edom were terrified. The different nations were melting with fear. What did they do as a result of this feeling? Absolutely nothing. They remained Moab, they remained Edom, they remained who they were as Yoshvei Knan. When Yitro heard by Yishma Yitro, he immediately got up and said, I'm going to concretize this feeling of wonder of this tremendous miracle that happened, and I'm going to change as an individual. And he went and converted. We have friends who at the birth of every child that they are blessed with, they take on a different chumrah, a different stringency that they weren't keeping until then. Whether it's Chalav Yisrael or different things that they take on. Because they understand for them that the birth of a child is not only the gift of a child, for them it's an inspirational moment where God is granting them a most wonderful blessing. Take that wonderful moment and concretize it into something real. Make a change. Make an addition. Do something where every time you're involved with this action or you see this symbol, you recall that moment of inspiration and allows to guide you and gives you direction and reconnects you with that moment of inspiration. Every time you see that rainbow, every time you saw that sword, every time we take on that action that's different because we've been inspired, that reconnects us to that moment of inspiration and allows that inspiration to change us as people. We've seen, therefore, two prerequisites and two responses. Prerequisite number one, we're open for inspiration. We pull off the road. We're in the driver's seat. Prerequisite number two is we're open to change. When the inspiration comes, the daily, weekly inspirations, act on them immediately. Bring them into eternity. Do something positive as a result of that inspiration and create everlasting life from that momentary flash of inspiration. The more major inspirations of life actually take on something, create a sign, so that we are different people as a result of this inspiration, and the sign and this different action are clear reminders of this change. Our final question. Why does God inspire us in the first place? What is the point of inspiration? I'd like to briefly suggest that perhaps really an awakening call to come back to self on the deepest of levels. We know there's a beautiful medrash we're familiar with, that when the child is in its mother's womb, it's taught the entire Torah. And then, at the last moment, the moment of birth, the child is touched on its upper lip by the angel and forgets everything. So the obvious question is, well, why bother teaching it if it's just going to forget it? To which, as Rabbi Katz brings down in Living Inspired in Source 25, it's really not forgotten. It's driven deep into the unconsciousness. We have within us constant inspiration that's found within the deepest part of self. An inspiration which is the understanding why we are in this world. An understanding of our connection to God. The teaching of the whole Torah, understanding our place in this world, our special relationship with God. We all have this deep inspiration, this wellspring of knowledge within us. Every time we're inspired individually, it's really trying to help us resonate with that deeper inspiration that's constantly found within us. Those small moments of inspiration trigger within us to be able to touch that deeper inspiration that's found within us at all times. The moments of inspiration bring us back into a reality, into clarity of what purpose we are brought into this world. Rabbi Katz brings a wonderful imagery of the Rambam, describing what life is all about. The middle of 28, he says, the Rambam describes life as a dark night on a stormy plain, lashed by the rain, lost in the darkness. One is faced with despair. Suddenly there's a flash of lightning. In a millisecond, the scenery is as clear as day. One's direction obvious. But just as soon as it is perceived, it disappears. One must fight on through the storm with only the memory of that flash for guidance. The lightning lasts very briefly, the darkness may seem endless. And that's life. We work through life in a very dark plane. We get so caught up in self, so caught up in the different aspects of life that we sometimes lose our focus. We lose our direction of where we are supposed to go in life. That flash of lightning is that flash of inspiration which says to us, remember for what you are here. Connect with that deeper part of self. Connect with that inner inspiration which God granted to you as a gift before you were born. The goal of life is really to take those moments of inspiration and allow them to touch us so deeply that we don't need inspiration anymore. We live on a level of inspiration constantly. We're able to touch that deeper part of self and live based on that deeper part of self. And that's why it says, Rabbi Katz, that the third phase and happy is the one who attains it while yet alive is transcendent. It's a regaining of the level of the first phase, but now deserved, earned, and therefore far beyond it. And he says there's a statement of the sages which describes the final transcendence in Source 30, the transition from this world to the next, and it describes the angels which come to greet a person at that time. One of these angels comes to search out where is this person Torah, and is it complete in his hand. The Gaon of Vilna points out chillingly that the higher being which asks this question is not a stranger. Suddenly one recognizes the very same angel with whom he learned Torah in the womb. And the question to be answered is, where is the Torah which inspired you then? Have you brought it into the world and made it real and can now be called yours? I think, therefore, what we've seen today is that the inspirations that come to us during our lives, the little ones as well as the more major ones, are really gifts of God, gifts of light that allow a person to see direction and clarity in life. They allow us to feel that godliness within us. It allows us to touch ourselves on the deepest level. And it's a wake-up call to say, are we on the right path? Are we moving in the right direction? And therefore, I think that if we work on opening ourselves up to be open to these inspirations, and we're ready to be changed by these inspirations, so then when we are inspired, we will realize that these are gifts of God, which we need to act on immediately, to grab the moment, to seize the moment, and to say, I will now take these gifts and become a different person because of them. I'll act on these gifts. And the acting on these gifts, the doing of the mitzvot, the changing in a very concrete manner, that sign of the rainbow, allows each and every one of us to really touch the deeper part of self, to come in contact with that womb-like inspiration, and in that way we'll be able to respond to that original angel after 120 years. Yes, we've been able to use life and inspirations that were given to us in life to realize our potential and to come closer to God. From God, a gift from God to allow ourselves to be in touch with self, to be in touch with the original inspiration, that we can make our lives meaningful and give it direction and purpose in our lives.